Good afternoon. You're very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Clare Byrne. On today's programme, a nation once again, Northern Ireland voted to stay in the EU. Is that reason enough to ask whether now is the time for a united Ireland? We'll tease through the possibility of an All-Ireland poll and whether we can afford to take on the financial burden of the six counties. Also today, did Fianna Fáil make a misstep this week and allow Simon Coveney to steal a political march on them in the rent control battle? We'll ask our panel. All that to come, but first it's time for the news now with Susan Jackson. This is Saturday with Clare Byrne and you're very welcome to the programme, and you're also welcome to get in touch over the course of the next hour. The text number 51551, email saturday@rte.ie and on Twitter at SaturdayRTE. Joining us today, Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin TD for Donegal and finance spokesperson, Dara O'Brien, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin Fingal and foreign affairs spokesperson, Joe McHugh, Fine Gael TD for Donegal and Minister of State for the Diaspora and Overseas Aid, Tony Foley, Senior Lecturer in Economics at Dublin City University, and Orla Ryan from thejournal.ie. Now, the question we're asking today is it time to have a united Ireland? And that's the question we posed for our panel. We took a poll. So we have a poll panel for Clare Byrne Live, the TV programme. It's run by Amorach. It's a smartphone panel of 1,000 plus adults, demographically representative across the 26 counties. And the results are 46% said yes, it is time to have a united Ireland, 32% said no, and 22% don't know. And perhaps interestingly, the 25 to 54 year olds, that was the strongest yes category at 54%. Now, Piers Doherty, you've said previously that the demand for a united Ireland, your demand for a united Ireland, is something that's just raw in me. I believe in a united Ireland. But why is the time right now?
Well, in my view as an Irish Republican, the time has always been right for a united Ireland. We're nearly 100 years on since the partition of the island, and we're nearly two decades on since the Good Friday Agreement, which had negotiated into it and supported by the overwhelming majority of the people in the south and in the north, 97% of the people here in this state, which allowed for a border poll which could bring about a united Ireland.
Under what circumstances, just so the people are aware, could that border poll happen? Who has to decide the time is right?
The Secretary of State of the North.
Is that ever likely to happen?
Well, it is in my view, and that's what we in Sinn Féin would like to see bring about. So we've called for a border poll to take place. We've said that should happen in the lifetime of the next government. That was our position before the last general election. So we're not prescriptive that it should happen tomorrow, next month, or indeed next year. In my view, if a border poll were to happen in that view, in the view of the party, is that would be counterproductive. The key thing in terms of a border poll is the type of debate that we have, the type of information that we put into the public arena. And in light of that there, for those of us who believe that Irish unity makes sense, that our political positions are to bring about Irish unity, as is enshrined in our own constitution, then we need to work together to start having those discussions and tackling the big issues as to what does a united Ireland mean? Because many people around this table, and I'm sure listening to your programme, will have different views in terms of what a united Ireland is. And from Sinn Féin's point of view, we're very probably keen in terms of the idea that this has to, we know that we need to be a driving force in terms of bringing this debate about, but we also know that we can't deliver this in ourselves. And while we might have a vision of what a united Ireland will mean for us, we are also very conscious that that isn't the type of vision that will be delivered, because there's other people here, there's other interests that have to be taken into consideration. And that's why we produced our document, which I think is quite a searching document for anybody who reads it, and allows for a different type of constitutional arrangements.
This is your reunification document, which you produced in November. It was published, right, last month?
Yes, and it basically starts the debate in terms of what would a united Ireland mean in terms of governance structures. Would it mean that we would have a Stormont executive still up and running, but just instead of British rule, under Irish rule? Would there be a federal type of government? What would we have in terms of our constitution? How would the rights of the unionist population be enshrined? What about the need for a new Bill of Rights that would make sure that different traditions and identities would be respected? From our point of view in Sinn Féin, Orangism is a part of our tradition. It is a part of our culture. So therefore, where does the role of the loyal orders have in terms of a new United Ireland? And they're the discussions that we need to have and need to be started by those who advocate for a United Ireland and then reach out to communities that aren't convinced that a United Ireland is in their best interest.
So, Dara, that all sounds very reasonable. Micheál Martin said Sinn Féin, he accused them of being as reckless as those who campaign for Britain to leave the EU, saying that they propose a United Ireland without having thought it through. But that sounds as though they are thinking through and asking people to consult.
I think first and foremost, I think it's for all of us. Like my party and I personally want reunification. We've been very clear on that. And that's where we were to the forefront with other parties in building a consensus around the Good Friday Agreement. I think firstly, what we got to focus on is the immense challenge that Brexit represents our country, North and South, and is actually representing and advocating for the hundreds of thousands of Irish citizens who are in the north of Ireland and who will be outside of Europe. And I think what our issue was very much, and I was personally very critical of this at the time, was the call. Now, Sinn Féin had been consistent enough on calling for border polls, but was the day of the referendum result in Britain was actually that morning again calling again for a border poll. Now, I think that's counterproductive.
Why?
Well, I'll tell you why it is, because I think firstly, you've got to convince, you've given your figures in relation to the Republic and the 46% who want a United Ireland, and I would be one of them. But you've got to look at the north of Ireland, that only 22% of people in the north want reunification right now. And we've a big job to convince people, particularly of the unionist tradition, but also people who would have been considered in the nationalist tradition, who now aren't voting at the same degree as they have done before, because they don't feel that...
But why is it reckless? Why is it reckless, though, for Sinn Féin to produce that document?
Well, it's not reckless to produce a document.
You don't agree with your party leader?
It's not reckless to produce a document. What we said was reckless was around the timing of the call for a border poll, because it deflected from what the real issues are. Now, what we need to do is to show good cause about representing those people, particularly in the north, of both traditions as we come through the Brexit crisis that is here, and with no ulterior motive, not trying to bounce people into border polls. I believe a United Ireland will happen, but it's only going to happen by consensus. And I think it's only going to happen by building and rebuilding a lot of the trust that, frankly, that Sinn Féin were part of actually ensuring that we were further away from a United Ireland than ever before. Now, I think when you go back to Sunningdale, you go back to, you know, those where we had All-Ireland institutions were proposed, all of those things, that's a different generation. But now I think through the Good Friday Agreement, our role in Fianna Fáil is to protect the Good Friday Agreement, because the Good Friday Agreement itself could be under threat due to the Brexit negotiations, depending on what the London government want. Fundamentally, though, it's for all of us to work together in actually presenting a vision of what a United Ireland would work. And I welcome all parties presenting. We're working on a document ourselves.
Suggesting it now, you say, is jumping the gun.
No, not suggesting. I say, look, calling for a border poll now is jumping the gun. Absolutely. That is provided for in the Good Friday Agreement that was voted on by the people of Ireland.
I
remember it, Pierce. I voted myself on it, right? So, you know, across the 32 counties, it's provided for there. Now, that is when it looks like a majority of people, north and south, would actually go for that. If you'd have voted tomorrow morning, and if you'd have voted border poll tomorrow morning, the reality of it is that would not pass in the six counties. Our job is now to convince people who are suspicious of Dublin involvement and of Dublin politics, right, and of Leinster House, is to convince them of our good faith in that regard. And I think the next 2 years are particularly crucial because I've spent a lot of time in the north, particularly since the Brexit vote. And actually, we have people of all political persuasions looking for leadership and actually worried about the approach of the London government. And that's where I think the parties in Dáil Éireann have a role, and certainly where Fianna Fáil have a role, is to advocate for those people, the civic society.
We'll get more on that in a minute. But Joe McHugh, I just want to find out what the Fine Gael position is on all of this, because in the summer, Enda Kenny said that it might be a possibility, that a border poll might be a possibility, but he seemed to pull back from that when Arlene Foster went bananas when she heard what he said. And then he later said in November that he's seeking an uncomplicated route to United Ireland after the Brexit negotiations. So where are you at?
We're very much focused on the peace process, very much focused on the architecture of the Good Friday Agreement, which is both north-south and east-west. And that continues apace. And it's very, very important to point out that this debate we're probably having today is probably as a result of the Brexit decision, which was a decision about leaving the European Union, not leaving the United Kingdom. So by proxy, we're probably having this debate. But the good thing is, and the important thing is, there has been an up in the ante in relation to cross-border engagement because, and I agree with Dara, there is a reaching out from the northern end for more collaboration. They're looking south for leadership. And Enda Kenny is providing that leadership. Charlie Flanagan is providing that leadership. He was in Belfast on Wednesday. And there's been an up the ante. And the important thing to point out is before any border poll happens, there has to be a deep understanding of the many, many complications that still exist in Northern Ireland and an understanding of the divisions that are still there.
So what's the Fine Gael answer to the simple question, is it time to have a united Ireland?
I don't believe now is the time to have it, but I do believe that because of the result of Brexit, because there are people within Northern Ireland who do want to be part of the European Union, that we need to be very focused on that relationship. And we need to be really focused in the area of agriculture, business, economy, common travel area, the uniqueness of the island. And by being focused on that, we are going to forge a whole new relationship. And my own personal opinion, for what it's worth, I think we're entering the second phase of the peace process. And some people did become complacent in relation to the peace process, thinking it was a finished piece of work. It's very much still in its infancy. It's very much still a very fragile process. And I think, you know, even look at this week, Michael Creed has had a cross-border sectoral meeting with his northern counterparts. He's going to have another one in the new year with fishing on Monday. There's going to be an education cross-border sectoral meeting. And this week I met with the British ambassador to talk about the northern issue as well. So I think we're going to have an upping of the ante in relation to cross-border engagement. And I think that's going to be a good thing.
Orla Ryan, talk to me about all the phone calls that you made and all the emails that you sent. You asked all 158 TDs mm-hmm. two questions. What were the questions?
So the two questions you've been asking in recent weeks are, number one, would you like to see a border poll in the north during the lifetime of this government? And number two, if such a vote was passed, would you support a reunification vote in the south? So just under half of TDs replied, 74, and of that, 38 agree that the time is right for a border poll, 23 of those being from Sinn Féin and 33 do not. As Dara mentioned there, a lot of his views that he's just said came up time and time again, particularly among Fianna Fáil TDs, basically that ultimately they would like to see United Ireland, but the time is not right.
And how many Fianna Fáil TDs responded?
So 22, 22. So okay. just about half. So and of that, the majority have said that now is not the right time. 16 of them said it's too soon, and that by having a vote within the lifetime of this government or within, let's say, the next 5-10 years is still too soon because ultimately would damage the goal of reunification because it would not pass.
Busy people in Fianna Fáil, but even busier in Fine Gael. How many Fine Gael TDs answered you?
13.
13. Mm-hmm. Of 50.
13 of 50, yeah. So of that, 10 of those, including the Taoiseach and Foreign Affairs Minister Charlie Flanagan, have said also the time is not right during the lifetime of this government. It would be too soon. And they've mentioned the Good Friday Agreement and the work that still needs to be done in terms of the peace process, and having a border poll could heighten sectarian tensions in the north, and that essentially it's too soon.
Okay, it's interesting that the low response that you got, given
it is,
that we're
yeah.
told everybody is interested in this, particularly in the light of the Brexit result.
It is. We've done this poll over a longer term than our previous TD audits, but still have a slightly lower response rate, which is interesting, say, in terms of when we asked people about the Eighth Amendment, more people responded, which some people might think is a more controversial topic, but it seems as though a lot of people, particularly in Fine Gael, don't want to talk about a border poll, so it is interesting.
Is that true? Fine Gael don't want to talk about a border poll?
No, I don't think so. I think we get a lot of these questionnaires as well, and I suppose politicians decide, you know, maybe will I answer it, won't I answer it? But certainly from the Department of Foreign Affairs that I sit in with Minister Flanagan, we ensured that there was a department response which you received.
Did you answer it? Did you give a personal response?
No, I didn't give, well, just the department
response.
No,
there was a response from the department on behalf of Minister Flanagan.
Yeah, I did, if it's on one of the 50.
Well done, Dara.
Just to say, I did. Thank God I did, actually.
Sinn Féin, unsurprisingly, was the only party that had full
turnout.
And for-profit AAA also did as well.
In fairness to them. Pierce, you want to come back in there?
Yeah, look, the focus on the border poll is important. We did raise the issue of the border poll and have consistently raised the issue of the border poll. It wasn't just in the light of Brexit. And I've spoken to nationalists, Republicans, and indeed people who would see themselves from the loyalist community who have questioned now their own identity or affinity with Britain as a result of Brexit, and for the first time are starting to challenge themselves in terms of a united Ireland. Now,
but what do you say to Sarah's point that it's just the time is not right because you could not bring the North with you?
Well, first of all, I don't want to get into party political debate, but what I would say to Dara is that is exactly what they said a decade ago when Sinn Féin brought forward a proposal for a green paper on Irish unity, where we tabled it in the Dáil. Kevin O'Kellen led off in that debate at the time when we only had a handful of TDs, and both Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil said a green paper should not happen at this time. Now, let's just put this in context. What is a green paper? A green paper is a policy discussion document to have a discussion about what type of united Ireland we want. Now, so the point I'm making is I don't want to go into a tit for tat with Fine Gael or with Fianna Fáil. Fianna Fáil, they voted against, like, giving the Northern representation for a vote. Yeah, in the Shannon. And it is a disappointing vote in terms of Irish, to vote in the Irish presidency just last week. But the big issue for us is not just the border poll. It's because the border poll in itself is the trigger, is the point at the end of the journey. And if you look at Scotland,
what happens,
for example,
at the end of that border poll? What happens to that result? It's, well, not a binding result, is it?
It is. Yes, it is. It is very much a binding result. If the
but would
majority,
it affect constitutional change if it's an All-Ireland?
The Good Friday Agreement, if the majority of the North and the South agree to Irish reunification, then the British government are obligated under the international treaty to facilitate that. So this is
so that would be it. You take the poll, you take the results.
This is for the first
time
ever under the Good Friday Agreement there is a constitutional mechanism to bring about Irish unity. But the key point here isn't the border poll itself. 2 years out from the referendum in Scotland, they weren't able to achieve 30% for support for independence in Scotland. They came within a whisker, and it's likely the polls are indicating that they'll probably win it. And the second thing, the key thing for us is the debate that needs to happen. Yeah. So while everybody is saying they don't agree with a poll now, the point is that these parties across Sinn Féin, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and others who support Irish unity, or who at least declare that they support Irish unity, are not having a conversation with each other to actually say, how will that Irish unity look?
I think
that is what we're trying to invite these parties into that type of discussion.
I would just be very, very clear. If Fianna Fáil supports Irish unity and reunification,
why won't you talk about it? That's
we
what
do
he's
talk.
Saying.
Sorry, we do talk about it. I've talked about it at every opportunity. We've spent a lot of time, and my colleagues in the North, post Brexit in particular, we were, you know, heavily involved in putting together the Good Friday Agreement. I think what we need to look at is that we've a Stormont Assembly at the moment that's not providing leadership for the people in the North, frankly, and it isn't, and it's fractured. We've also a situation whereby the architecture under the Good Friday Agreement hasn't been used to its potential, frankly. Like, we've had 24 North-South Ministerial Council meetings, you know, since 1998.
Oh, no, but you're saying, now is not the time to have this conversation about a border poll. Let's just talk about
it. That's totally wrong. Sorry, if you don't mind me saying, you're saying now is not the time to have a conversation. Of course it's time to have a conversation. The question was, is it the time now to have a border poll? I'm saying now is not the time for a border poll. Have a conversation.
Because you wouldn't get the result that you think is desirable.
And I think what we've really got to do is to focus on the serious challenges for Irish people across the 32 counties of this country.
What do you say to the Scottish example that Pearce has just
You know what I'm more concerned about is Ireland. Scotland will look after herself. And what it's about is about Ireland and about how we're going to move forward, particularly in the next 2 years. Next March, for God's sake, Prime Minister May in Britain is going to move the Article 50 letter, is going to start the negotiations about moving out of the EU. We will have hundreds of thousands of EU citizens who will effectively be stateless outside of the EU. I would actually think that the idea of talking about are having a border poll now. And frankly, Sinn Féin did say it the day of the referendum result. That was the first thing they said that morning, was to gain international publicity by saying, well, another Scottish referendum, maybe an Irish referendum. Look, we can't play ducks and drakes with this. I want to see unification. My party does as well. But our first priority is actually looking after the welfare of the citizens in the South and in the North.
Okay.
And that's what's got to be done.
Right. Well, that's why you denied them the right to vote last week in the Shannon. If you want to go into that, and first of all,
we're talking about Brexit here. We're talking about real issues for real people.
Actually,
we're not talking about nonsense like that. We're actually talking about representing
Deputy O'Brien. If you declare, and this how you portrayed this in this studio, that it is nonsense to talk about the right of Northern citizens to cast a vote in the presidential election,
that is something displays
the type of attitude that the party and some people within the party, because I believe the grassroots have a different view in terms of this issue.
And our parliamentary party will tell you, and our grassroots
The point is, we make no apologies for bringing putting this onto the political agenda in the context of Brexit.
Okay.
Because the best way to secure the right of the people who cast their votes in the North to want to stay within the European Union is through Irish reunification.
We need to take a break, and I'm going to come to Tony Foley after this break, and he's going to answer this listener who says, have Sinn Féin been into the mulled wine? We cannot afford to run our own country without paying for the North as well. The silly season is underway. Tony Foley's going to tell us all about that after this break. So we have today Joe McHugh, Fine Gael, Dara O'Brien, Fianna Fáil, Pearse Doherty, Sinn Féin, Orla Ryan from the Journal.ie, and Tony Foley, Senior Lecturer in Economics in DCU. And Tony, you are up. United Ireland, can we afford it?
Could I just make one comment on what was said earlier, is that we seem to have agreed that we don't actually want a border poll immediately, that we have to have the conversation and the debate. And that would be the kind of thing we're now going to talk about, is what would the economic impact be? And as Pearse, I'm sure, will agree, we have a dearth of information, and it is good that there is the Sinn Féin document to basically start people talking a little more seriously about the implications. We have a range of figures as to what the North costs, ranging from 1 billion to 10 billion in terms of a deficit that Westminster has to pay. And the way that's calculated is they estimate the expenditure in the North, they estimate the revenue that comes out of the North in terms of tax revenue, expenditure about 24 billion, revenue about 15 billion. And that then gives one estimate of the maximum deficit. But that is subject to all sorts of estimation, calculations, guesswork and so on. So, for example, we don't know exactly how much revenue comes out of the North. So we have estimates of it. We don't know exactly what the right amount of expenditure is, because that 24 billion in expenditure includes identifiable expenditure, non-identifiable expenditure. For example, 300 million goes on the Imperial War Museum and the British Museum. 2 million of that is allocated to the North on the basis of population and so on. So there's all sorts of figures like that. An element of the British interest payments on the national debt would be allocated to the North's expenditure. So if we're talking about the money that's actually spent on northern citizens, as it were, it's about 18 billion or so. So what are we looking at? Is it 18 billion or is it 24 billion? Now, you could argue, well, even if the North joins with the South, it should share part of our overheads and so on and interest payments and that. But we can quibble about that. Now, so we have various estimates. The Neary Institute, Tom Healy, director of the Neary Institute, just basically made a point between, well, if we took out the non-identifiable, the deficit is 5 billion a year. If we include it in, it's 9 billion a year. Pearse's document in terms of the Sinn Féin economic aspects talk about if we allow for extra revenue, such as multinational profits, which are earned in the North, but the tax is booked or paid in London, well, then if we include those kind of elements, we might be looking at a deficit of between 3 and 5, maybe.
That's the Sinn Féin estimate.
The Sinn Féin estimate. Okay. But even if we took that as the estimate, say an average of 4, and take off another 500 million for maybe that multinational profits that rightly belongs, you're looking at a deficit of 3.5 billion on the assumption, and this is a critical assumption, which I'm sure Pearse would jump in on me, that there isn't a dynamic economic impact of unification, that we get increased economic activity. And I'll come back to that. So roughly an estimate would be, at the lowest estimate, almost a Sinn Féin estimate, if you like, on nothing else changing, 3 to 3.5 billion a year is the gap in the North's tax revenue versus its expenditure.
Is that not terrifying to every taxpayer?
Well, it's a large amount of money because it's an annual sum. Yeah. And the absence of ongoing economic growth and so on, it's 3 to 3.5 billion per year. So if we want to do sort of figures, eight years or 10 years, well, that's 35 billion and so on. Now, that's the kind of thing which then has to be talked about. Now, personally, I'd be in favour of United Ireland. I would happily pay, well, I don't have 3 billion to pay, but I'd happily pay my share of it in terms of the cost. But that creates its own problems. You see, one of the reasons for that 3 billion is that they have better health services than we have, for example. So is it going to be the case that the South would still stick with its pretty miserable three-tier health service, pay over 3 billion a year to help fund the better health service in the North? Now, I know Sinn Féin's objective would be, well, we should all have a national health service equivalent. And of course, that means extra tax, extra expenditure and so on.
Or would you be asking Northern Ireland to say bye-bye to the NHS and put up with our service?
If you want to have, and I don't think a border poll would be successful in favour of United Ireland at the moment. And if you ever want to have it success, you're not going to be asking the population to do that.
To give stuff up.
So it's basically keeping what they've got.
I
of that, though, relates to the assumption that there wouldn't be a dramatic economic sort of dynamism coming out of unification.
You don't believe there would be?
Well, there's a recent report, and one must give credibility to the people who have done the work. There's a recent report which estimates that, it's the Hubner report, that there would be an economic gain of 35 billion over the first 8 years of unification over the whole island, simply arising from unification.
Okay.
And that's roughly divided two-thirds to the north and one-third to the south.
He also said, though, this is Professor Kurt Hubner in an interview with the Sunday Business Post, that the high level of public sector employment in Northern Ireland at 31% could not be sustained. Yeah. We assume reductions in the public sector in Northern Ireland by 2% on an annual basis. That's something they're not going to vote for either.
But hold on, that's included. If I can just mention, that's included in the report. The report, which comes up with this 35 billion, works on the assumption that the Westminster subvention would just be taken over by the Republic.
But you see, the thing is, and I get that, and none of us know exactly the figures, of course we don't, but when you look at the economy in the North, hasn't really evolved post 1998. It hasn't developed as it should have. If you look at infrastructurally, and I'd say 20 years ago, you know, no one would have thought we would be saying this, but the reality of it is the infrastructure in the north lags far behind the infrastructure in the south. So there would be investment required. Well, it does, and the A5 and things like that, which aren't done, the M1, the completion of that. You only have to cross the border and you see the difference in the infrastructure in many parts of the north. That would require in itself a big investment that would actually give a return, no doubt about that. But there's loads of other costs, and the economy itself, the reliance on the public sector, the reliance on state subvention for certain jobs, all of those things would have to be looked at. It isn't and shouldn't just be about cost either, mind you. It is doable. It can be done. But you would have to actually project this out, and it's not something that you could do a la East and West Germany scenario. We're in a very different position. But
the money thing is very important.
Of course it's very important.
There's a behaviour and attitude survey which was done for Primetime and the BBC last year, and 31% of people in that survey said that they would be in favour of United Ireland if they had to pay more tax. Mm-hmm. Not great, is it? 31%?
I think we've heard a good rundown in terms of the figures, and a lot of figures out there. And one of the things that we tried to do in Sinn Féin a number of years ago is to actually start to dismantle some of the myths around there, because the figures were being used by some of our unionist colleagues that it's 24 billion euros, the subvention. Others were saying it was 20 billion. And this is coming from official reports. So what we did is we said, right, that's okay. That may be the expenditure, but what type of expenditure, as we heard? It's about some of its royal museums.
Why won't Westminster just tell us?
They don't. And that's one of the big problems in terms to Scotland as well, and that's one of the big things that the SNP did in advance of the referendum, that they did a lot of work on this for years in terms of the economics of an independent Scotland. So what we've been able to distill down with the figures, official figures, is that the cost would be in about 2.7 billion euro sterling. That's what we've got it down to. But there's a caveat in that there, and that is the caveat is that every British firm that is headquartered in London pays their corporation tax to England, so therefore we don't know how much other tax we're losing, so it could actually reduce further. So we're not settled on the 2.7 billion, but we're saying that that's likely the highest figure. Now, even if it was that figure, and we think it could be lower, if there's a United Ireland, the independent consultancy report, which is of serious credibility given the authors who have done it, have estimated that the economies would grow in both in the north and the south in a United Ireland scenario by 35 billion per year.
Why are you shaking your head?
They don't estimate that it will. They present a scenario which puts arithmetic into a model and produces arithmetic out, and then says this is possible.
Yes.
Now, of course it's possible. Like, we know and forecast the Celtic Tiger here, and then it arose. But equally, coming up to the collapse in 2008, we were presuming we'd grow by 4% a year, and we didn't.
Estimate by theirs, it's an estimate based on their model.
But can I just mention two aspects of their estimate? One is they assume that we will, in fact, it's more like a takeover than a merger, because they assume the North will adopt the Southern fiscal stance. So the 12.5% tax rate will be there. But that's going to be there anyway.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, Joe, if I
could just finish on the point I was making.
Pierce, let Pierce finish and then Joey, come in. The
economy would actually, they're estimating based on their model that the economy could grow by 35 billion per year. When it was actually peer reviewed by the Vice President of the International Studies, they're saying that it's quite conservative, and they reckon it could actually be more than that. Now, even if there was a figure of 3 billion, and your listeners will be scared to hear 3 billion, that would mean that we could only cut the USC by a third instead of abolishing it. So just let's put it into context. Like, this isn't about additional taxes. There's options here. Even if there was no synergies by having one health system, if we were to imagine that we weren't going to save one penny on that, if we were to have one education system that we weren't going to pay one penny on that, then the Irish, or 1 cent or whatever it is, then the Irish government under our proposals, we'd have to pay an extra $2.7 billion. But that would mean that instead of dismantling the USC, we could only go about 30 or 40% of the
way
there.
So it's doable, you're saying?
Of course it's doable, but of course there's going to be benefits through the synergies as well.
Joe?
Okay, I've listened to a wee bit there now. I did agree that we need to have the conversation, we need to have the debate, we need to talk around it. But one thing that drives the public daft is maybe politicians talking about pure speculation without facts. And maybe just to be helpful to peers, if we don't know the figure of the amount of money that's been subvented to Northern Ireland from Westminster, there's a very simple way of doing that. One of your colleagues can go on, one of your MPs can go on and ask the question of Theresa May into Westminster. Secondly, let's talk about the facts of the money that is already going
into... What evidence do we have that she's going to answer?
Well,
We do have that information. And Joe doesn't understand
No, but what I'm saying, they could physically go into the House of Commons and ask
the question. We are the Minister for Finance
Secondly, let's talk about the figures that we do know about. Let's talk about the 19 million that went into dairy radiotherapy services for the whole of the North West, which is going to be a service for Derry, Tyrone, Donegal, people that need radiotherapy services. So there's a lot of this collaboration already happening. The 75, Dara mentioned the A5, the 75 million sterling that we're committed to for the A5. So this is about the building blocks of the unity, of the bringing people together, be it services, be it infrastructure or whatever. But we have a job to do here. The basic job we have to do here is to reach out to people in Northern Ireland, and we have to reach out to their hearts and minds. We have to reach out to communities that are divided, that are looking for our leadership. When I went to Derry a few days after the Brexit vote, the people in Derry were looking to Donegal, we're looking to Dublin, we're looking to how
and
we can...
Is reaching out telling Sinn Féin to go into the House of Commons? Is that reaching out? Building bridges?
The big problem in the terms of the modelling Irish unification is that we have one report, which we're not 100% comfortable with some of the assumptions in the report, but there's one report. The government has never, ever commissioned a report. Commissioned a report on unification or the economics. This was commissioned by a conflict resolution group in California.
I was just going to say something to help Pierce, is that, as you would know, the Good Friday Committee within the Oireachtas are going to be working on this very thing, cross-party, to look at what would a United Ireland look like.
But he's right in that no government has ever produced a report like this.
Governments have actually done, have done their best to try to end the troubles and terrorism on the island, frankly, that we were, while other people were more concerned with tearing down states, some other parties were actually looking to protect the state and protect their citizens.
In the TD survey that we did, the issue of cost actually came up very, very rarely. Hardly anyone raised it. So if you look at the TDs who did reply, the vast majority of them do want a united Ireland. So many of them said it's not going to happen now, but they believe it will happen in their lifetime. Yeah. They pointed to the peace process and the fact that the poll that Dara mentioned there, where one in five people in the north said they would like a united Ireland. That's 4 in 10 Catholics, but 9 in 10 Protestants want to remain in the UK. So the issue of cost, while very important, if you look at what our TDs think, most of them say, you know, it could be doable and they would like to see it at some point, not now, but ideologically, most politicians in Ireland or most TDs seem to do want it. In terms of those who've replied, they do want a united Ireland
I do find it hard to believe, though, that people wouldn't be concerned about an extra $3 billion.
I think people are concerned about costs, and you've got, of course they would be, when you look, that's what about the debate is, and you've got to present, if we got to a stage, which it will happen in future, about the cost to both states and what will happen. You've got to look at how politically it would be run. Do you retain Stormont in assembly there? The Dáil should have primacy in the United Ireland, but how you would do that and all those type of structures, and would they be there for good? And there's a whole process.
What would happen to the currencies?
Well, that's the other thing. Absolutely.
The Hubner report assumes, again, in the merger ethos, that the euro becomes the currency in the north. End of story. No discussion. But it's interesting, and it shows you one of the problems in these kind of medium-term arithmetic projection exercises is they assume that sterling would be strong and the euro would weaken. So effectively, Northern Ireland's currency would devalue, and would that give a boost to their export performance? But of course, with Brexit, it's gone the opposite way.
Yeah, and you can assume, you can't assume very much.
The one thing for sure is, though, that we're going to have to, and I'd agree with Pearson, I think everyone's in agreement on this, is that preparations and scenarios are going to have to be agreed, because Brexit does, in my view, bring the scenario of United Ireland much closer.
When will the time be right if it's not right now?
I think it's about that. It's about convincing people that that Dublin, and when I mean that the Irish Republic has their best interests at heart, and that it would be a better place for us to be in a united Ireland, North and South. And there's a job of work to be done there, but I actually think the next 2 years could be crucial in that. That, you know, where the London government and Theresa May seem to be disregarding the North as 2% of the overall population of the United Kingdom, and the fact that James Brokenshire, the Northern Secretary, isn't even on the, a permanent member of the Brexit Cabinet Subcommittee, shows you how important London thinks the North of Ireland is. And I think there now, Dublin and all parties, us sitting around the table here, can actually show that the North and our citizens, be they citizens, Irish citizens or people who are British citizens or whatever, that we show just cause with no ulterior motive, that we're there to actually represent them, and that we have the selfish interests of the nation, all 32 counties of it, post-Brexit. And I think that could, well, we could be convincing people over the next 2 to 3 years
Yeah, just to add to that, like, there is nearly unanimity around, even Michelle Barnier this week has comments, yeah, we need to treat, you know, the North, the peace process, keep it up there as a priority. British government, nationalists, unionists, we're all on the same hemshed politically, that there's an issue, there's going to be an issue with the border. But when you speak to private citizen, they're very, very concerned over the whole, the next period, the next 2 years around the negotiation. Absolutely. As to how that will manifest itself. And while we all say politically, there'll be no hard border, we don't want a hard border, the person, the private citizens asking, well, how can you have a Brexit without it? So the next 2 years is going to be crucial. Yes. The negotiations, once Article 50 is triggered at the end of March by Theresa May, it's going to be absolutely crucial. And it goes back to my original point. While this is going on, we have to continue to reach out. We have to reach out to unionism, and we have to look at ways of making the very unique situation of an island.
Irish unity is not going to happen by chance. It is not going to happen by wishful thinking, and it's not going to happen by political parties saying the time is not right. It's going to happen by preparation. It's going to happen by getting, for example, the ESRI or the Department of Finance here to commission the type of report that was commissioned by a charity group in California, the only report we have on modelling Irish unification in terms of the economy. It's about giving certain steps, like giving rights to Irish citizens to vote in presidential elections, something that isn't an affront to unionists, but yet Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael voted against those steps. They are things that would instill confidence, not within just the Republican Nationalist community, but also others, that they have a voice in terms of in terms of the Parliament here. So the question is, what the first step that needs to be taken, in my view, is a green paper on Irish unity. That means a government discussion document. Instead of saying that we're going to have the
I think that'll evolve. Through the Good Friday Committee in the Oireachtas, work is going to commence on a paper, be it a green or white paper, and I think that's something that should be done. But we've got to be very careful where we're at right now, that we're not seen as a state in actually preparing for a united Ireland right now, when we're actually, what we should be focusing on immediately is the next 2 years of negotiations about Brexit, about jobs and livelihoods in the Republic and jobs and livelihoods in the North.
Okay, green paper time, Joe?
It's common travel area, economy, the citizens, North and South. That's a priority. Absolutely. That's a focus. And just on the presidential, just for clarification and information for Pearson, the presidential voting within the Department of Housing, Simon Coveney's officials are preparing a report to be handed to Cabinet early in the new year in relation to presidential voting. Right. So there is quite a bit of momentum around that.
I'm glad you mentioned Simon Coveney, because we're going to talk about the politics of what went on this week in just a moment. Dara, I want to start with you on this one, because Simon Coveney has been crowned the king of politics.
Has he really?
Kicked Fianna Fáil to touch, showed you who's boss, Barry Cowan, put it up to him and had to back down in the end.
Simon probably and Fine Gael better, you know, remember that, like, pride comes before the fall as well. So, you know, I don't think he can, I think being serious about it, it's a very serious issue. Obviously in relation to rent.
Forget about the issue, right? Because I don't really want to talk about it, because that's been teased. The politics of it, though. Fine Gael backbenchers were delighted that Simon Coveney faced you down this week.
No, but hold on. There were a number of things. What was proposed on Tuesday versus what was voted on yesterday was
not very different.
No, it was very different. Let's be fair, there's over 100.
I wasn't.
Do you want me to answer or not?
Come on,
do you want me to answer?
Come on.
You have, initially, it was going to focus on Cork City and Dublin only, okay, your rent pressure zones. Now we have Limerick, Galway, Waterford City, Loudmead, Kildare included.
That's not in the legislation.
Well, no, it's not.
No, but it's going to be as part of the initial
those
review.
Those reviews were all...
So, no, look, hold on. Anyway. The reality of the situation is...
What about
is
the 4%?
We would have rather two. Frankly, absolutely, we would rather two, and I still would rather two, but the reality of it is something's got to be done. And when you actually are dealing with it, at least there's a degree of certainty. And if you go back to last July, Fine Gael wanted no intervention in the market whatsoever. And I think that is absolute. I would have rather other things about security of tenancies and things like that. It is not perfect. It's a start. And I think most people will also realise is once you get to discuss this insofar as you produce the legislation, it has to be acted on quickly because the market then reacts.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't want a situation, and to be fair now, we had to be responsible on this as well, that this is let drag into January. Then you would see landlords, be they institutional or private landlords, actually reacting with further rent increases and things like this. So is it perfect? Absolutely not. But the key now is, and this is where Simon and his Fine Gael colleagues have got to watch it, the key now is implementation. So, you know, he might be walking around like a peacock if he wants to be, okay, but the reality of it is now he's got to actually do what he said he will do. And we'll be watching that very, very closely. Yes, we would have rather 2% as opposed to 4, but we're not in government. It's about being responsible. It's about trying to find somewhere in the middle
But what we also learned was that you have the ability to cause an election, but the time is not now, despite good poll numbers.
Look, this is too serious a subject, to be very frank with you, that there are people, we're dealing with people all the time. At the moment, all of us as TDs, I'm sure, who have massive increases in rent in my own area in North Dublin, two-bedroom apartment, 1,500, 1,600 euro a month. And how are couples and individuals supposed to even aspire to owning their own house? Landlords and banks taking buy-to-let apartments off them and people being turfed out in the street. This is not an issue to play politics with. What we're trying to do is get some type of compromise. And that's what I believe.
Okay, well,
if it's not an issue to play politics with,
why go in and say 2%, 2%, 2%, and then a few hours later, back down?
No, it wasn't a few hours later, by the way. That's not how it happened at all. Like, when we saw the legislation, we looked at it when it was presented.
2% or 4%?
It'll be 4%, okay? And I would rather, and my party would have rather 2%, and we've been very clear on that. Could we win on everything? Absolutely not. Have we got commitments now to look outside, look at the commuter belt and other cities? Absolutely. That wasn't there at the start. Proper resourcing
of the... And if you're a landlord now, you'd be putting up the rent.
Proper resourcing of the Residential Tenancies Board. You know, all of these things are very important.
Okay.
Is it perfect? It's not perfect.
Brian Dowling from our political staff is here. Smackdown for Fianna Fáil or not?
Well, I think when you asked the question first, Claire, I couldn't help but notice that Minister Joe McHugh, sitting across from us here, he had a smile that was almost brighter than the lights on the RTE Christmas mask.
Forgive me, Dad. Forgive me.
And I think that says Christmas. Everything. Look, you know, you look at the legislation as it is now and you say, if you're sitting in Fine Gael, what has substantially changed in this? Nothing. Fianna Fáil got a few concessions, but they were relatively minor in the great scheme of things. Some of the changes are to accelerate some of the things that were already planned in any event, and there are minor tweakings to it. But if you look at this as someone going eyeball to eyeball with someone, the person who would be happiest sitting today is Simon Coveney. There's no two ways about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that about sums it up. I mean, you only need to walk around Leinster House and look at the demeanour of Fine Gael TDs, ministers, in the last 48 hours, up to yesterday evening. And they were very, very happy with themselves.
Well, I think the reality of it is, and I've been very serious, which is about the implementation, is this going to work? And if Simon feels...
Well, that's an entirely different...
No, it's not.
That's a different issue, the fundamental thing.
But this is the thing. You're saying, you know, well, there was minor changes, but you're looking at, like, immediate examination of market conditions. Like, we were very disappointed that the department and the minister hadn't carried out, apparently, you know, the detailed examination of rent levels in the adjacent counties and other cities in the country. That was something that I was absolutely stunned that showed a serious lack of preparation by the minister. Okay. So we've got to actually see in January how this works.
If doesn't deliver within the first couple of months of next year, you can have no doubt that Simon Coveney will be under horrendous political pressure if this doesn't work.
Joe McHugh, tell us now what was going on. Was everybody cheering Simon Coveney and Fine Gael apart from Leo Varadkar?
Look, maybe first of all, Brian, I've learned the lesson in radio. Facial expressions can go out into the public domain. So I've
to watch
that,
everything in
I've
here.
That lesson.
I don't think you could contain yourself, to be honest.
But look, secondly, look, I was speaking to Simon this morning and he was catching up with his family and all that. And, you know, he's knocking around like a peacock. He's very much focused on a massive piece of work that still needs to be done. One thing I learned over the last few days from, you know, going through the legislation, it's much wider than the rent caps. And it's a substantial piece of work. And the work that Simon and Damien English and their officials have put into this has been absolutely massive. And I do acknowledge Fianna Fáil. They made a submission. There were over 500 submissions. I acknowledge Sinn Féin as well. They made a submission. So there was a big piece of work here. We got it across the line last night. And I think if there was the positive that I got out of last night was that if you think back to the first day of the Dáil, when we had such chaos, to see last night that cooperation in the final few hours, and it wasn't just the focus that we didn't go back, we're not going back Monday, but there was a focus and there was a realisation that homelessness and high rent premiums are a massive, massive issue in this country. So, in obviously in the high pressured zones of Cork and Dublin initially, and there
was
will be.
Was there a sense around the place that Fianna Fáil needed to be put back in its box and that no concessions needed to be given here?
No, but I mean, okay, well, maybe the narrative had been that maybe, you know, the tail was wagging the dog a wee bit in the last few months, but there was a sense and a realisation that, that you know, Simon did take charge and the Taoiseach, in fairness, stood up as well and stuck to the line that they were going to deliver this and work it. And it's, I think it's good for politics and I think it's good that, you know, everybody had a say and there is an implementation that will require...
There were 12 distinct proposals that we put forward. 10 of them are contained within the legislation, okay? And that's important. 100,000 additional households now from January should actually be covered under the protections of this legislation. That wouldn't have been.
But the only tail was wagging the dog, and the dog got a kick.
Well, I don't know. Well, that Joe said the tail was wagging the dog. I'm saying, well, we were being responsible and actually trying to do something that's going to assist tenants and people who don't know where they're going to be living in 3-4 months' time, who can't afford to pay rent. Like, that's the serious issue that we're dealing with. I know there's the political sideline to it.
I know, and that's what we're talking about today.
I know that. I get it.
Just two quick points. On a rent of, say, 1,500 a month, which would be fairly reasonable, we're talking about €30. I mean, we're talking about if it's the beginning and end of the world kind of thing. It's 4% versus 2%.
€30
in terms of the tax. Whereas the big problem is that it's 1,500, not whether it's going to be 1,530
You're
or
right,
1,560.
Actually, yeah. It's the
and we're still a long way away from doing
true.
That. But just on a real conspiracy theory, I would think this is great for Fianna Fáil because Simon Coveney needed something to be a serious contender. And I think Fianna Fáil would rather face an election with Simon Coveney as leader than Leo Varadkar.
Do you think?
Yeah. I think that probably should get the shot as best conspiracy theory of the year.
Absolutely.
I think that's fantastic.
It's not something that interests us. Who's
and if you want
Finnegan's,
to add to that, the Taoiseach took a really tough line and apparently told Simon Coveney on Thursday, do not back down no matter what happens. Stick to your guns.
Yeah.
So maybe the Taoiseach is actually making a move to keep that race open.
That people sitting in their homes who are renters in Dublin or Cork are probably screaming at the radio because they are saying that I'm paying 15,000 or 18,000, and what Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have done in this legislation last night is if I'm living in Dublin, it will go up on average by 720 per year, and if I'm living in Cork, it will go up by over 500, which puts me on the verge of being homeless. And that's what this legislation is about, regardless of who was strutting their stuff or who won out at the end of the day. While all of that was happening, they missed a major fundamental problem with the bill, which we spotted, which was that the rent was allowed to increase by 8% in the first year.
Did Roisin Shorthall spot
Roisin
that first?
Shorthall mentioned that in
and
John Curran have mentioned it as well
after we mentioned it, but yeah, look, let me say Fianna Fáil
does
Fianna,
that really matter does
of, well it actually
who,
does because
of who,
see,
of who
see,
noticed it first
no
Pierce,
no it
really?
Doesn't it's not about who noticed
about,
if you so, can let me finish well, you put forward
you're the one who threw John Curran's name in.
Fianna Fáil put forward an amendment to the government's proposal that actually would allow for an 8% increase in the first year. Sinn Féin were the only party who put forward an amendment that actually stopped that. That's the reality of it. It was raised on the plinth. We had an amendment down and others then raised it afterwards. But the point I'm making is, while all of this play acting, political posturing was going on, renters could have seen their increase not €720 this year, but actually €1,440. And that's what real opposition is supposed to do. It's supposed to be about scrutinising the bill. But I'll tell you something. Our offices, we were getting calls from Dublin and from Cork from renters to saying that they can simply not afford this extra thousands of euro, which they're going to be expected to pay over the next 3 years. And while everybody is genuinely concerned about homelessness and the fact that we've seen such a rise, and I'll be going down to Apollo House just straight after this meeting, and I don't believe anybody's insincere in relation to that there. This legislation will result in homelessness because there's certain people who simply cannot afford their rents at current levels.
One of the things about the legislation is that what's really significant is that Fine Gael has actually moved into an era of rent control, which was unthinkable a year ago.
July, and they had to be pushed into that, and that's to be welcomed. I would, again, 2% would have been much preferable, but we got to deal with supply, security of tenancy. This is just one aspect of the whole crisis.
Darren mentioned supply and security. They're both on the legislation. Supply, you know, Weathers buildings in receivership is to look at it. And
implementation now, though.
Yeah, but I mean, supply is a big part. And if you go through this legislation, it's very focused on trying to look at solutions. There's an enormous amount of vacant buildings in this city here this morning and in other cities.
This legislation guarantees
and supply, security, standards, services,
extremely
important. Thank you all very much indeed. That's our final radio show before Christmas. We're back on New Year's Eve at 11 a.m. I hope you can join us then. Back on the television in the meantime on Monday night. So hope to see you then. Thank you for listening. And happy Christmas if I don't catch up with you before then.
Saturday with Claire Byrne was produced by Kay Sheehy. Research was by Annette Egan. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. And on sound today was Ruth Kennington.